Welcome to Listen to Older Voices, a program produced at the Melbourne Community Support Program and brought to you through the Toorak Times. It's always a pleasure to bring you, through their stories, the life and times of older people in our community. All very interesting, all very different, and all very entertaining. I'm Rob Greaves, and this is the second of a three-part program featuring the story of Jim Walker. Last week, we learned that Jim was born in Camberwell, Victoria, in 1936. Jim's father meant a lot to Jim, and we learned that his dad tried his hand at many things, including going to sea, initially as a stowaway, but eventually becoming a galley hand. He returned to Australia and worked first at Mount Isa, and then decided to work in the Tasmanian tin mines. But on his way to Tassie, he met the woman who would become his wife. We learned that Jim's father was a very dedicated, hard worker, and we begin to understand that in that regard, Jim was just as hard a worker as his father. We follow his story of starting his own company and meeting his wife-to-be, Jeanette. One of his funniest stories is how Jim got his driver's licence, having had the local policeman as his passenger before he actually obtained it, and this leads to a really great story. And that's the hallmark of Jim's stories. They are so very great, both in substance and in the way in which he tells them. We pick up now with Jim talking about some of the work he did as an industrial electrician.
One of my jobs was specialising in steel wire armoured cables, underground cables.
Oh, okay.
So all the plants had a big high voltage cable going to each plant from the main switch room, and I used to have to do all the terminations on the cable. These cables are 3 inches in diameter.
Oh, it almost like your hand.
Yeah, with steel wire armouring on it, so you've got to know how to clamp it and then cut all the steel wire off, put a gland on, and then do the connections.
Right.
So then I decided then I had enough of that, flew home to Melbourne, got to Melbourne. It was the grand final day between Ringwood and some other thing playing at Croydon. I had worked with a man named Peter Lay, with an electrician in Croydon. I walked up to the footy ground and there was Peter Lay, and he said, "What are you doing back here?" I said, "Oh, I finished work in Darwin and up through there, come back. Do you want a job?" he said. I said, "No, I don't want a job, I want a holiday." So on the Monday morning, he rang me at 7 o'clock, got me phone number, and he said, "I want you to come and work for me." So I worked for Peter Lay for 3 or 4 years.
But they were good years for work, were they? Work was everywhere in
the period. I never was there at work.
Yes.
Then I shifted from Peter Lay, went to work for a friend of his, working at Melbourne University, putting all the big electrical installations in all the office buildings down there.
Worked. Did you ever end up taking on an apprentice yourself?
No, I worked for a few companies. HH Greens were big companies, and that's when I finished my apprenticeship, and worked in Melbourne. Then I decided I wanted to become my own boss.
That doesn't surprise me.
So I went back to school and I got the top certificate you could get, started my own company, and I worked for myself for about 30 years.
That would have been a lot more satisfying, wouldn't it?
Well, when you work for yourself, you get a bit sort of taken up by yourself. You think, "I'm going to work for myself, and then I can have days off when I want, and I can have the weekends off and everything," but you don't.
You work harder.
You work harder.
That's right.
So I worked for my boss and worked there, and then started as a contractor to the Melbourne Metropolitan Board of Works.
Mm-hmm.
They want electrical contractors. You had to be a contractor. So I had to take out electrical contractor's licence. And then we worked in the tunnels, which the sewer tunnels.
That would have been different to any other work you'd done, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you build a big tunnel boring machine and put all electric motors on, driving hydraulic pumps and all that, put all the lights on, and that runs on rails in the tunnel.
Uh-huh.
And starts off, they build a big concrete bulkhead behind it, and it pushes itself ahead. And as it pushes with the hydraulic rams, they put a liner in the tunnel and then push ahead again.
Right, so you're sealing it basically as you're going along.
And some of the tunnels were compressed air tunnels. You go in through an airlock.
Why was that?
Water, you keep the water out.
Oh, of course, of course.
And it only takes a minute to pump the air up, but then it takes half an hour to decompress. Otherwise, you get the bends.
Of course, yes.
So I worked in those tunnels, and I went from Dandenong out to Hallam, from there, Dandenong up to Ringwood, and then down to Carrum to the treatment plants down there.
So you've been all over Melbourne Underground.
Yeah.
Then, in some ways.
Then the Border Works got a contract then to dig the tunnels for the rail loop.
Oh, okay.
And we did all the same work there, but it was a different way of digging. You know, the big backhoe with the big hydraulic arm, mm-hmm. that was mounted in the middle. And it could reach out and do a 28-foot diameter tunnel.
Oh, okay, so it sort of went in an arc around
itself. It was mounted on the front. It's a big hydraulic arm, just pull the bucket down and do 28 feet. So then you did that one, then you shifted sideways, then you went up, and then so you did a tunnel 56 feet in diameter tunnel. And that's where the rail trains that go through.
Right.
And that was a compressed air tunnel too.
Yes, they ran into a bit of problem there with water, didn't they?
Yeah.
Yes.
There's a creek runs down through under Elizabeth Street.
Yes.
That went right through.
Yes, I remember, I think it was in the 60s when they had some really, really heavy rain and...
big flood.
You remember the creek was under there because the way the water flooded down there. Yes, I remember that.
So then I worked in there and then... the contract was going to finish, so I just picked up work for myself, working for private people or working for builders.
Was that underground work dangerous, or was it all?
It's not dangerous, but it's consistent. You do the same thing over and over and over until you get a breakdown. And half the time, we didn't have to do any work. If the machine's working, we're not working. But if the machine breaks down, we're going to fix it.
And quickly.
If you get a broken cable or a burnt out motor or something.
Right.
And one night in the tunnel where we're about 2 kilometres in, all the lights go out. We all always used to have a torch with us. So I had to walk out all the way. The loco, they wouldn't drive the loco in with no lights on. And when I get out there, the substation had blown up on the outside.
Just pulled too much current, had it?
Loose terminals or something. So I lost all power there. So then we had a telephone ring through and say, no power, won't be on for another 8 hours or something. So I had to abandon the shift.
Yes. That would have seemed like a long journey by torch. Yeah. Stumbling
and quite a lot of water in the tunnel. You had to wear rubber boots all the time.
Yes, yes.
Another part of my job, I worked for a man from Mount Waverley, Alec Edgar, and we worked at Mount Buller.
What were you doing there?
They build all the apartment buildings and things up there.
Okay.
We did all the electrics up there.
That would have been nice work, wouldn't it? It'd be a nice area to work in.
Oh, bloody snow and sleet.
Okay.
I worked from the top of the mountains down to underground.
To underground, from one end to the other.
Right.
Yeah. So you sound like you're a little bit like your dad. You haven't shirked work.
Oh, I keep going.
Indeed.
I've got a wood-fired heater there.
Yes.
I go and cut my own wood. I've got 2 chainsaws, a truck, a trailer. I've got a 25-ton wood splitter.
Oh, that's a big boy.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
And I go up quite often. You see there's a tree falls over on the road around here. Well, I'm a woodpecker. I go out to come back.
Oh, trees fall around on the roads around here often.
Yeah.
That's right.
And the last load of wood I got was over at the school there. They come and cleaned all the trees out there about for a month back.
Right.
So I got a load of wood out of there.
Oh, so you're never short of wood, never short of heating, no.
No.
And you've tuned into Listen to Older Voices, featuring the life and times of older Australians. I'm Rob Greaves, and I'm talking with 80-year-old Jim Walker.
Now, you obviously were married.
Yeah.
What was your wife's name?
Jeanette.
How and when did you meet Jeanette?
I used to have a 50-50 dance at Yarra Glen.
Dances, they were big, weren't they? Yeah. The weekend and, dances, yes.
Of course, you know, three or four of us mates all go to the dance.
Sure.
Try and pick up a girl.
Of course, as boys do.
So I met her up there and we got married in 1959.
Well, hang on, whoa. You didn't meet her and marry her the same day. When you first saw her, was it a bit like your dad? Was it, you know, instant attraction or did it grow?
Oh, well, I saw this red-headed girl sitting there and I thought, you know, she looks all right. So I saw her next week at the dance and the next week and then we started going out together.
You liked dancing?
Yeah.
And she obviously liked dancing?
Yeah, we used to go. So, always just to Yarra Glen dance because she lived in Yarra Glen.
Right. So, any types of music popular for you or did you like it all?
I just never had anything special, just
nothing
music,
special.
You know.
Yeah, yeah. What else did you to do when you were courting? I mean, dancing was one thing, but you must have done other things.
What did we do? Nothing much. Just
did you have a car then when you met
Yeah, I always had a car.
Always had a car.
I bought a car the day I turned 18, or before I turned 18.
Could you get a licence then?
I'll tell you.
I think we have a story here.
My dad had a 1935 Ford V8 sedan.
That was a big monster.
Yeah, Butte car. And I was a member of the Ringwood Rifle Club.
Right.
Because Bill Hall was a local policeman and he must have seen me and Vic and it hanging around a bit. And he said, you blokes better start coming out to the rifle range with me and start shooting. And we're always interested in rifles.
Mm-hmm.
So we'd meet at the clock tower in Ringwood when it was down this end of the street. And he had a little Austin A40 panel van with windows in the side of it. And we'd all go out to that, to the chutes and things. And then I must have been getting close to 17 and a half or so.
Mm-hmm.
And Bill Hall said, they're having a shoot up in Bendigo. Would you like to go up to the shoot up there? And I used to shoot pretty well. You know, I was always in the top six or eight in the club. I said, yeah, I can take my dad's car. Didn't tell him I didn't have a licence. So we're driving down the road early in the morning, and then they used to have major roads. When you came to a crossroad, there was a major road you had to stop.
Oh, at the major road, you had to go to
it. It's about 5 in the morning, and I just go through, and he said, hey, you're supposed to stop at that major road. Didn't they teach you that when you went for your licence? I said, I haven't got a licence.
Oh, boy.
He said, you haven't got a licence? Get down to the police station, I'll get your licence. I'm not 18 yet.
Oh, dear.
So, I was born on Mother's Day, and quite often my birthday fell on Mother's Day. I was at the shoot, and I said to Bill Hall, I turn 18 tomorrow. I'll be down on Monday morning to get my licence. And he said, how do you know you're going to get your licence? The Ringwood Police Station was in Pratt Street, so in a little office across from a private house.
Mm-hmm.
I went down there. Mum had a little Morris Minor. She took me down. And I walked in and said, good morning, Mr. Hall. He said, you don't have to call me Mr. Hall. You can call me Bill. So I said, good morning, Bill. He said, what are you here for? I said, I've come down to see if I can get my licence. And he said, well, I know you can drive. There's a number plate nailed on that fence across there. Can you read the number plate? And he said, yeah, of course you can. You beat me at the shoot on Saturday. Give us your 10 shillings for your licence.
That was it?
That was it.
That was your licence test. Oh, boy. Okay, so time you met Jeanette, you are at least licensed as a driver. Yeah. So did you go driving together? Did you ever
check out places? I used to work 6 days a week.
Oh, right, okay.
All the time, you know.
Busy boy, yes.
When I out of my apprenticeship and that, and I was saving up, wanted to get a house and all this. Anyway, I met Jeanette, and we used to go up to the dance and we'd go to family groups and things sure. like that, you know.
Sure,
and then I bought a block of land, paid £400 for a block of land, and I made the mistake. The vendor had two, and he said, give me £200 deposit on each block of land. But I said, no, I want mine. If I bought that second one and paid it off, it would have doubled in price in 12 months.
Oh, yes, definitely. Oh, hey, we've all got those stories. We've all got them. So how long had you been going out with Jeanette before you actually asked her to marry you? Was it a very long time or a short time?
I worked it out 50... I came back from Darwin in 1957 and I got married in 1959, so we would have been going out for 18 months or so together.
Okay, yep.
Going to the chapel and we're gonna get married. Going to the chapel and we're gonna get married. Gee, I really
listen to older voices, Ageless Radio.
Were you nervous when you asked her?
Well, not really, because I sort of all the time, this is what I'm going to do.
Ah, okay, yep.
And she was a lady's hairdresser then, and she was staying with a friend down in Ashburton and working at a shop down there. So I used to go down to Ashburton and see him down there and then come back. Yeah, we got married at a church in Yarra Glen, and then there was a arsonist bloke running around burning churches down, and we got married in December of 1959, and he burnt a church down in Christmas, just after New Year.
Wow, so you were probably one of the last people to get married in that church.
Probably, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Was it a big wedding or just a very small one for family?
We probably had 30 or 40 guests, I suppose.
Oh, okay, that's big enough, yes. Did you get on well with her parents?
Yeah, good, yeah. Roy was an ex-Navy man.
Mm-hmm.
Marion, she was a family woman, you know, everything was for family. They used to have, Roy was one of the caddy families that came from Walhalla.
Mm-hmm.
And he married Marion, but his mother was a noble. And Richard Noble was the manager of the Walhalla mine.
Right.
So that was part of Roy's history, was Walhalla. And then we got married, had my first daughter was born 18 months after we were married. We had six children. I only got five now. One died from misbehaving, not doing the right things, drugs and alcohol. So we lost him.
So who was the first child?
Kim.
Kim.
Kim, girl, yeah.
That must have been a pretty joyous moment for you, having your first child.
Yeah. All my children were born at the Bush Nursing Hospital. At
Little Is that Eden, right?
Oh. When it was the old Bush Nursing yes. Hospital. And then they wouldn't let the husband in.
No, isn't that was...
Yeah. Yeah. And so what I used to do, I used to drop my wife off there and then I'd go home and say, ring me up.
What else could you do?
Yeah.
Boy, health, that's one of the things that has changed these days yeah. for the better, isn't it? I mean, that was really quite ignorant.
Oh, the old matron said, get out, no men allowed.
For goodness sake. Yeah. Did you enjoy being a father?
Yeah, I did, yeah. And we used to, when the kids were growing up, we used to go on hunting trips up in New South Wales, pig right. shooting and
right.
all that there. And
so they all learned how to use a gun, did they?
Yeah.
Did you and Jeanette do any travelling together?
No, not really, just holidays. We used to go down to Apollo Bay or somewhere. Or with my mate Vic, his wife and my wife and that, we'd go to Apollo Bay and Vic was into scuba diving, but I never liked that.
Right.
So I'd go out in the farms and things and I'd shoot rabbits and then I'd come back and swap them for fish.
Fair deal. That's a fair deal. Indeed. Did you go to Apollo Bay very often or was that a one-off thing?
Oh, about every year we go.
About every year.
Yeah.
So when was roughly the first time you went down to Apollo Bay? Would that have been in the 60s or the 50s?
Yeah, about 60s.
So it would have been a lot different to today. It wouldn't have been very built out then either, would it?
Good country town, you know.
Yeah.
I had a 57 Holden panel van. I think that was the FC model Holden.
Right.
Had one of those and we used to pull a trailer down with our tents and everything on it and put them up and stay in tents.
So that was also your work van, was it?
Yeah, use it for work.
Oh, they made them solid in those days, didn't they? You could really tow anything with them. They were solid cars. Did you ever get into working on the cars or was it just a means of transport for you?
No, just use the car for work. And I used to do my own maintenance and things, but, you know, oil changes and greases. That's all you ever had to do to a car those days.
Yeah, try and do that today.
Yeah.
You mentioned earlier about a motorcycle accident. So you were a motorcycle rider for a while, were you?
I've still got a motorbike licence.
Oh, good for you. I never had a lapse.
But I haven't ridden a motorbike for years and years.
So what was your first motorbike? Can you remember?
I had a 350 Jawa.
Right.
Czechoslovakian bike.
Yes.
They were a twin-cylinder, two-stroke. And they were good bikes. But I hit a patch of water and oil on the road, skidded off the road. Hit a tree and broke the bone in the outside of my leg and dislocated my ankle.
That was pretty painful. Oh, yeah.
Well, I didn't know, really, because I hobbled around for 5 days.
What?
And then I decided I'd go to the doctor.
I don't know whether you were brave or silly.
And, the leg had all swollen
of
up.
Of course.
And it was the outside bone on your leg. I think it's a tibia, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so. I never get the quite right.
It's an ancillary bone. Anyway, they put my leg in plaster, and because the ankle was dislocated, it took a long, long time for the tendons to shrink. I had my leg in plaster for nearly 6 months.
Well, that would curtail work, wouldn't it?
next week is the final part of Jim's story. And those stories actually just keep on coming. But in all honesty, there's never a dull moment, which can be exemplified by the story of his son setting fire to Jim's workshop and another son swapping Jim's beloved Triumph Thunderbird for a cheap Japanese trail bike. So many stories, so well told. Next week, the final part of the story of Jim Walker on Listen to Older Voices. Listen to Older Voices is produced by Rob Greaves at the Melbourne Community Support Program on behalf of Wesley Mission Victoria. The program is supported by financial assistance from the Commonwealth Government through the Commonwealth Home Support Program and is brought to you through the Turak Times.